and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. The statistics are frightening. The number of telephone imposter scams has increased more than tenfold in recent years. Complaints jumped from 3,200 in 2017 to 35,000 in 2018. We have a very serious problem, and we need to know as much as possible to protect ourselves from being victims. Today, AARP and the New York Times offer examples of Social Security, one-ring robocall, and how to protect yourself. Three from AARP include Doug Shadell's March 22, 2019, Social Security Scammers Tried to Swindle a Fraud Expert, A Guide to Protecting Yourself from Fraud by Lance Whitney, April 10, 2019, and The Expert Share Latest Fraud-Fighting Tactics by Judith Kozlowski, also April 10th. And from the New York Times, the FCC warns about the one-ring robocall scheme by Sandra E. Garcia, May 6, 2019. And first, we'll see how Doug Shadell thwarts a Social Security scammer. Among the hottest telephone scams in the United States right now is the Someone Stole Your Social Security Number ploy. This past December, the Federal Trade Commission issued a warning about the fraud, noting the agency had already received more than 35,000 complaints. And my colleagues at the AARP Fraud Watch Network say complaints continue to come in. The scam typically starts with a robocall like this one. This call is regarding an enforcement action which has been executed by the U.S. Treasury against your Social Security number. Ignoring this would be an intentional attempt to avoid initial appearances before the magistrate judge for a federal criminal offense. Before this matter goes to federal court or you get arrested, kindly call us back at our number. Well, I received a call like this and decided to dial back to see exactly what the scammers say to get people to hand over their money. My persona was Carl Johnson, a kindly, soft-spoken gentleman who happens to have plenty of savings. Here's what happened over 46 minutes of phone conversation, edited for clarity and length. Hello, Social Security Administration. Officer Alex Morgan speaking. How can I help you? This is Carl Johnson. I got a call about my Social Security card. Officer Morgan sounded like a male between the ages of 22 and 32. He was clearly in a boiler room because I could hear several others talking in the background. He began by asking me to verify my identity. I gave him my fake name. Somehow, he was able to pull up my file on his computer immediately. And I gave him a fake home address and fake Social Security number. But he pressed ahead as if all was confirmed. Mr. Johnson, I'm a senior officer in the Investigation Department of the Social Security Administration, he told me. I can see that law enforcement agencies have found more than 25 stolen bank accounts opened using your Social Security number to commit a fraud of more than $10 million. These accounts were used in numerous criminal activities like money laundering, drug trafficking, and for Internal Revenue Service type tax scams all over the state of Texas. I need to ask you a quick question for which you need to reply with one word. Do you own all of these 25 bank accounts, Mr. Johnson? Yes or no? Well, it was an absurd question, but effective, meant to create fear and confusion. I don't know. I don't think I had that many, but maybe I do, I muttered. Officer Morgan, smelling potential, worked to reel me in further. He explained that scammers had gotten a hold of my Social Security number, but he would help me sort it out. To do that, he needed to know exactly how much money I had. Please tell me the names of the bank accounts that are owned by you and how much is in each account so that I can determine which are your accounts and which are fake. And make sure you don't tell me the routing number or account number. If you do, that would be illegal. I told him I had two accounts. Again, both fake. a Chase account for $12,000 in it, and a Wells Fargo account with $85,000. In the con artist world, these amounts officially made me a whale, someone with enough money to warrant their highest level of attention. So Officer Morgan shifted to attack mode, doing everything he could to frighten me further. He ticked off a crazily long list of crimes linked to my card, then informed me that there were 11 federal counts of fraud charged against me. If convicted, I would face 30 years of prison time. The FBI was about to issue a non-bailable arrest warrant for me. After my arrest, all of my bank accounts, credit cards, debit cards, 401k plan, passport, and Social Security check would be suspended. Then he asked, "Do you accept all of these allegations under your name?" Another absurd, disorienting question. "Well, I don't know what to do," I said. "Now listen to me carefully," he said, more kindly. "We have been keeping a close watch on you, and after going over your past reports, we believe this might not have been done by you. We don't have any evidence that you performed criminal activity. But since your Social Security number came under this drug trafficking case, we need you to cooperate with us in finding that person." Going from threatening to being my best pal also is right out of the swindler's playbook. A primary objective of all scammers is to get the victim under the ether, slang for a heightened emotional state where the victim no longer is thinking rationally, but is rather reacting emotionally out of fear or excitement. Victims who are under the ether are significantly easier to manipulate. "Right now, you have two simple options, Mr. Johnson," he continued. "Either I could let the case play out and accept legal actions, or I could give him the phone number for Social Security so he could call over and start the process of clearing my name." "Huh?" I, of course, chose the second option, but asked why I needed to give him the number when he worked at the place. He said it was so I could be certain that the person who called me next really was from Social Security, because there are a lot of scams out there, Mr. Johnson, and I wouldn't want you to fall for one. Well, after some initial banter, he got to business. "If you want to prove you're innocent, the very first thing I have you do is issue a new Social Security number. But to do that," he said, "all my financial accounts would have to be safeguarded first so that criminals couldn't access them." Then the pressure got turned up. "The government is providing you 40 to 45 minutes time to resolve this matter. So you can confirm that in your Chase banking account you have $12,000. And in your Wells Fargo account, you have $85,000. Is that correct?" "Yes, but," I blurted out, trying to slow him down, but he seemed to actually speed up. "What you have to do is go to your bank and withdraw all of the money from your account as cash. Then I will let you know what to do next. I want you to go to the Chase Bank account and withdraw that money." "Right now?" I asked. "Yes, now, because we want to safeguard your money first. That's the reason." "Well, I don't know if I want to give you my money." "Oh, no. Who told you that you were giving me your money? You are not going to give your money to anyone, Mr. Johnson. If you have that thing in your mind, please take it out of your mind. No, no one is asking for your money, and you are not going to have to pay any money to anyone." He repeated this a few times in a few different ways to reassure me. I asked, "Well, why can't I just put the money in a new bank account?" "Well, Mr. Johnson, if you open a new bank account, you will be linking the same Social Security card number that you have right now. Am I correct?" Yeah, I guess so," I conceded. "Well, that is the problem." His instructions: withdraw $12,000 from my Chase account immediately and convert it to government-certified bonds so that I would not lose it to the criminal who stole my Social Security number. What did he mean by government-certified bonds? Well, these are prepaid cards that are available in government-certified stores like Apple stores, Walmart, Target, CVS, and Walgreens. These are government-certified stores. I believe you know that, right? Well, at this point, I started to get mad. How many thousands of older people had he and guys like him persuaded to take out their life savings and buy prepaid debit cards? But I stayed with it. He reassured me again that I was supposed to hold on to those cards until they issued a new Social Security card. I asked Shaw, well, how do I give you the government-certified bonds? Oh, no, you hang on to the bonds. That's my whole point. They will never leave your possession, and so you have nothing to worry about. If they never leave your hands, then you cannot ever lose that money. Am I right, Mr. Johnson? Well, in fact, it is protected. After you convert the cash to government-certified bonds, two representatives from Social Security will come to your doorstep in 48 hours to hand-deliver your no Social Security card. Then you can open new accounts and redeposit the bonds into your bank account. Well, okay, well, that is persuasive, but then came the bomb. Now, once you get the government-certified bonds, you just have to provide us with the serial numbers so that we can make sure we can update that on your file. And that's how they steal your money, ladies and gentlemen. With the serial number, they are free to withdraw the money and disappear. This is the point where I changed personas from Carl Johnson, easy target, to Doug Shadell, fraud fighter. Doesn't that give you access to all the money that is on those cards? He, of course, lied in response. Oh, no, we're not going to need to access the funds. We just need the serial numbers to update your files. Those are yours, and they are safeguarded. The whole point of putting the money on those government-issued bonds is to safeguard them. So, no, nothing will happen to the money. You have my word on that, Mr. Johnson. Angry, but with all my question answered, I simply ended the call. Mr. Shaw called back more than a dozen times, but I didn't answer. When the goal is over $80,000 in potential cash, expert crooks like Mr. Shaw will say anything to win you over, and I didn't need to hear any more. Now, the FCC warns about the one-ring robocall scheme. Your phone rings once, and the caller leaves no message. Thinking you missed a call, you call the number back. Someone answers, or maybe you get a recording. You stay on the phone listening to the person or trying to decipher what the recording is saying. Unknown to you, though, you have been connected to a line with high interconnect fees, similar to calling a 900 number, and a bloated phone bill is on the way. The Federal Communications Commission warned consumers about this one-ring scheme. It's also known as the Wangiri scam, Japanese for one ring and cut. These calls are likely trying to prompt consumers to call the number back, often resulting in per-minute toll charges, the FCC said. Consumers should not call these numbers back. The commission said the calls were relying on the 222 country code of the West African nation of Mauritania and were reported to be widespread in New York and Arizona. In April, Americans received 4 9/10 billion robocalls, or 163 million calls per day, according to UMail, a robocall blocking service. It's no wonder robocallers have become more advanced in how they hide their numbers and spoof or imitate numbers from other places. Defenses against robocalls have also expanded with the development of apps to block them and phone companies investing in technology allowing customers to identify such calls. But what happens when the call's purpose is to bilk consumers? International revenue share fraud is when fraudsters intentionally drive phone calls to premium rate phone numbers, said Tim Pruger, the vice president of operations at Nextcaller, a real-time verification technology company. These fraudsters get a kickback from the call. The potential cost of one of these calls to a consumer varies widely based on the location of the number and the amount of time spent on the phone, he said. Although the calls are being trafficked from overseas, the number that is spoofed, the one seen on the caller ID, takes the format of a phone number from the United States. Advances in technology allow massive amounts of calls to be made cheaply and easily, the FCC said. In addition, spoofing tools make it easy for scammers to mask their identity. The agency recommended not calling back unrecognized numbers, especially those that appear to be from overseas. It also suggested blocking international calls and checking phone bills for unidentifiable charges. They put 100 million calls out, and they know 1% converts into sales, Mr. Pruger said, referring to those behind the robocalls. Just by sending those phone calls, they are going to get 1 million people, at least. Well, here's a guide to protecting yourself from fraud. 15 ways to prevent identity theft. First, secure your paperwork. Opt for electronic statements. Thieves can steal bank account statements and bills and other documents from your home mailbox. Instead, said Paige Hansen, Chief Executive Identity Education at Norton LifeLock, choose electronic statements that get delivered via email or directly into your online banking account. Bonus, you may be able to avoid paper statement fees, too. Keep a shredder handy. Shred all bills and financial documents to keep thieves from fishing them out of your trash. Hansen recommends using a cross-cut shredder, which cuts the paper into smaller pieces than a strip shredder. Keep personal information safe. Freeze your credit report. This keeps creditors and others from running credit on you, protecting you from scammers who try to use your information to set up phony accounts. It's now free, but you need to contact the three credit reporting bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. You can always unfreeze it temporarily to allow legitimate access to your credit, such as when you apply for a loan. Stop entering sweepstakes. You may be enticed by the vacation prize at the mall kiosk, but before you enter personal details in any form, ask, what are you going to do with it? Advises Amy Nofsinger, director of AARP's FraudWatch Network helpline. Stop giving out your Social Security number. Some businesses, such as banks, credit agencies, and government agencies, legitimately need your Social Security number for reporting purposes. But that's about it. I often hear this question, well, if my doctor doesn't need my Social Security number, why are they asking for it? Nofsinger says, I have been to many new doctors, and I have never once been asked for a Social Security number after I left the question blank on the form. Guard your money. Use a credit card whenever possible, not a debit card. If you have a problem, you'll be covered if you use a credit card, but not as much for a debit card, said Frank Abnegale, AARP FraudWatch Network ambassador. But be sure that you can pay the credit card balance in full every month. Do not trade deeper debt for an incremental improvement in security. Better yet, use mobile payments. Setting up payments from your phone to use at retailers that accept Apple Pay or Google Pay can help protect you from fraud. You don't swipe cards that could be compromised by skimmers or expose your card numbers and security codes at the point of sale, said Rod Griffin, Director of Consumer Education at Experian. These mobile payments are linked to a debit card or credit card, so the money comes from the same account. Watch for scam calls. Add your name to the Do Not Call registry, and while it may not block all calls, it can help reduce the number of unwanted calls, Griffin said. Call the FTC toll-free at 888-382-1222 from the phone you want to register or go to donotcall.gov. Don't answer calls from numbers you don't recognize. The best way to do this is to adjust the Do Not Disturb setting on your phone so that only calls from people on your contacts list will even ring. Everyone else will go straight to voicemail. If it's important, they'll leave a message. And be prepared to hang up. If you do answer and hear a robocall, don't say anything. Just hang up. Do not respond to questions, especially those answered with a yes, as your response could be recorded and used by someone else to authorize fraudulent charges over the telephone. Protect yourself online. Be wary of public Wi-Fi. Scammers can tap into public Wi-Fi accounts and access information you receive and send. Using your phone's cellular data rather than public Wi-Fi is the best way to prevent this, said Sarah Hoffman, public information officer for the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners. Watch what you share on social media. Scammers can find a lot about you from social media, said Rebecca Harold, CEO of Privacy Professor. To protect yourself, don't share your phone number, your home address, or anything related to your work, payment information, relationship status, health information, birthday, or social security number. Yes, I have seen people do this, Harold says. And don't reveal your location. Posting photos in real time of your restaurant meal or hike reveals to the world that you're not home and won't be for a while. Similarly, wait until the vacation is over before sharing your stories and images. Stay updated on the latest scams. Don't fall prey to fear-based scams. AARP's Fraud Watch Network Helpline has been receiving calls lately from people who have gotten emails that threaten to broadcast evidence that they view pornography online. In some cases, the emails contain the person's email password obtained from a data breach, making it even more frightening. Even though most of our callers said that they have never visited these websites, they said that they were close to sending money just to avoid any further harassment, Nofsinger said. And don't respond to scam-related pitches. These are called reload scams. The scammers know you've been a victim at their hand, and to get more money from you, they will make an offer to help you recover your money, Nofsinger said. Do not respond. In general, pay attention to red flags and your gut if you get an email or a request that seems suspicious or out of the ordinary, she said. And what to do if you have been scammed? If you have fallen prey to fraud, take action quickly. With the right combination of information, scammers can open credit cards in your name, set up fake PayPal accounts, and cause other financial trouble, said Christine Durst, founder of CelebriCheck. Notify your bank and your credit card company. Contact the Social Security Administration about potential identity theft. Call one of the credit reporting agencies, Equifax, TransUnion, or Experian, to place a fraud alert on your file. And AARP's Fraud Watch Network can help you spot and avoid scams. You can sign up for free watchdog alerts and review your scam tracking map or call our toll-free fraud helpline if you or a loved one suspect that you have been a victim. And here some experts are sharing some of the latest fraud-fighting tactics. Stopping fake charities. Tracy S. Thornfieldson is an attorney and charity fraud expert with the Federal Trade Commission. She's been asked, "You have been going after charity scammers for the FTC since 1994. What has changed in that time?" Her answer, "The phone sweepstakes that I investigated 20 years ago were done by telemarketing, and they might now be done online or via email. The investment scams from the 80s were investing in precious metals or gems. These days, they are investing in Bitcoin. What are the newest techniques that the shady charities and fundraisers use to target older Americans?" Recently, we have seen a rise of telemarketing calls on behalf of political action committees, or PACs or PACs, that use soundboard technology, pre-recorded messages played in a way that makes people believe that a real caller is on the other end of the telephone. The calls sound just like the charitable donation calls that you may have gotten before. They will make it sound like you are giving a donation to help support the police, firefighters, veterans, or whoever. But it turns out that you are donating to a PAC. Is the FTC using any modern or high-tech methods to investigate fraud? Yes, tax-exempt organizations have to file 990s or IRS tax forms, and charities are also required to register and file reports in about 40 states. Preventing Medicare fraud. Matt Charette, Special Agent in Charge, Office of the Inspector General, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, was asked this question. What are the most recent schemes in healthcare fraud? We all talk about healthcare fraud in dollars, but it has a personal effect as well. For example, if a scammer were to use a beneficiary's information to bill for an electric wheelchair today, and if that beneficiary, God forbid, were to suffer a stroke next week and require the use of an electric wheelchair, Medicare wouldn't pay, because according to its system, that patient had already had the equipment. Well, what are the steps that you are able to take to combat this type of fraud? We try to do prevention first. We always try to reinforce the idea that nothing is ever free. One of the places where scammers pick up information is health fairs. They urge folks, hey, come on over, get your free blood pressure check. And then they're asked for a Medicare number. The minute you are asked for a Medicare number, that should be a red flag to realize that somebody's going to bill something somewhere in your name. How are you finding better ways to use data? We use data to identify hotspots where we see irregular billing. We have seen a decline in Medicare billings in hotspots where we have focused resources based on our data analysis. And can you tell us what some of the latest approaches are to combat schemes for older Americans? Yes, you have to be aware of the top 10 financial scams: Medicare, counterfeit prescriptions, funeral and cemetery, fraudulent anti-aging, telemarketing and phone scams, internet fraud, investment scams, homeowner or reverse mortgages, sweepstakes and lottery scams, and finally, the grandparent scam. Well, so don't be a part of the crime of the 21st century. Be alert and be proactive by subscribing to AARP's Fraud Watch Network. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for this show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.